Today, the property spruiking continues. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I wanted to take you through a recent news coverage item and show you how actually what they say is far from the truth. And this is important because there is still a major property spruiking operation going on at the moment, trying to get people to buy into the market despite the fact that prices are sliding and the risks in the market are probably more extreme now than they've been for some time. But before we go into that, just a quick reminder that on Tuesday, the 4th of August at 8 p.m. Sydney time, we're going to be going through our latest mortgage stress analysis, and that's through to the end of July. A whole bunch of new information. And we'll also update our scenarios as well. And we'll also have the postcode engine online if you want to delve into some detail. So mark your diaries, and I'll look forward to seeing you on the YouTube at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, the 4th of August. Now, before I go on, I also want to just acknowledge the many, many people who've been in touch with regard to the show that I put up on Friday, The Property Story from Soup to Nuts. Now, the first thing to say is that many people really appreciated the no-holds-barred approach that I took to the property market. And yes, I did take the gloves off, and I did get a bit angry because, frankly, it's really important to understand what is really going on. So if you haven't seen that show, I do recommend that you take the hour or so to watch it because there are some really, really important messages in there. And this show, in a way, takes the conversation further. So now what I want to do is to play you a short news item that was actually broadcast on 7 recently. And you may or may not be surprised by its content, but as you will see as we start discussing it, there are a few questions we should be asking.
New data has revealed house prices have quadrupled in more than 20 southeast suburbs since 2000. Residents who bought in the right suburbs are in for a big windfall when they go to sell their homes.
Now, the first point here to make is there is no attribution of that analysis at all through the post. So we don't know where that data came from. And so you can't actually test whether the information is or is not correct. So that's the first point just to bear in mind.
A four-bedroom, three-bathroom home for sale in Hawthorne that John Hall built 17 years ago.
It's still got the same Aussie feel that it had all those years ago, but in a sort of more cushy sort of way.
Now, the point there is, yes, he probably built it then, but it sounds to me, from what they said, that he's been doing quite a lot of renovations and improvements since. More cushy, he says. So, you know, you wonder whether in fact that's really the same as when it was built.
Thorne, now among 20 Brisbane suburbs where the median house price has quadrupled since 2000.
Now, again, the median house price has quadrupled since the year 2000. Now, you need to ask yourself why it is that they picked the year 2000. I'll show you that in a moment. And again, no attribution. Where's that information come from? Who knows? It could have been plucked from the air, for all we know.
I bought our first home here in 1990. I think we paid $72,000 for a home then.
Windsor experiencing the biggest jump, 492%. Sandgate prices increased 459%. Murarrie by 422%. In Inala, the median price was once $69,000, rising to $350,000 by June this year.
Places 20 years ago that people didn't really want to be in have really changed to be incredibly popular amongst buyers.
Analysts say in suburbs where there's been renewal, there's a ripple effect. Neighbouring suburbs also experiencing rising prices.
Now, it is true that when improvements are made to an area, it tends to spill out into other areas. And that's especially true if it's close in to areas reasonably close to the centre of town.
Health's fantastic. I think that's an area that is on the growth stage at the moment.
House prices fell 0.2% last quarter, but agents expect steady growth will return, with the River City considered a safe investment compared to further south.
Right, agents expect. So that's a really objective view as to what's going on with the property market. Talk to an agent, of course, they always think property prices are going to go up. Now, what I want to do is just take that analysis apart, because I think it's important for you to understand how this information is really tracking relative to how it was reported. Now, to do that, I'm going to start by just looking at the Brisbane House Price Index, and this is from the ABS, and I've taken it all the way back to the year 2000, and you can see there that there was indeed, in the early 2000s, quite a run-up. There was a plateauing around the global financial crisis. There was a bit more of a run-up. And then it went relatively flat in the last 2 years. That's since, let's say, 2017. So, in fact, for the last 2 or 3 years, almost nothing on average. And if you actually overlay that with some trend lines like that, you can see that a lot of the growth was in the early years. Now, ask yourself why that was the case. The answer is that in those days, when we were looking here between 2000 and 2007, before the global financial crisis, the lending standards were reduced, the competition for mortgages increased dramatically, and there was also some movement on interest rates that made properties more affordable, and banks also took their margins down a bit. Then, of course, things went relatively stagnant around the turn of the global financial crisis because their lending was tightened and interest rates, well, they were down, and then they went up again. And then from around 2012 onwards up till around 2017, that was when we saw a very significant cut in mortgage rates and interest rates. So the Reserve Bank basically was trying to stimulate the economy and trying to get households to borrow more. And of course, the debt servicing ratio had gone through the roof. It's now around 200%. And from then until now, there's almost no growth at all. In fact, they did say in that clip that prices had not grown at all in the last quarter. Well, it's more than that. It's been not growing for the last couple of years. So there you are. That is actually the true story. And what that tells you is that, yeah, sure, there may be some growth, but a lot of the growth can be explained by it's a long time ago, firstly. And secondly, it can be explained by the massive cut in interest rates. The average mortgage rate is now 6 or 7% lower from where it was previously. But of course, we are not going to see more rate cuts. It's impossible because we're so close to zero already. And frankly, all of the other headwinds that we are now facing, high unemployment, the issue with COVID, all of those things are now really bearing down on the market, whereas we actually had tailwinds from the year 2000 with deregulation, lower interest rates, banks allowed to borrow ever more, higher and higher debt-to-income ratios to the point where we're now 200% over here. So don't assume, therefore, that just because there was growth previously, it's going to continue. Now, the point I think they should have made in their TV segment was that, sure, there might have been some growth, but there's no guarantee at all of future growth. And yeah, whilst you could argue that there might be some more attraction around Brisbane relative to the prices in the city of Melbourne, all the data suggests that may not be the case at all. So I'm afraid that this is all spin. And there's more to show you. Now, this is showing you the quarterly percentage change in house prices since the year 2000. And you can see there that the yellow line is giving you the actual data, the blue line is the 12-month average. And again, you can see that house prices grew up till 2008-09 quite strongly. There was a very significant run-up prior to the global financial crisis where prices were around 7.5% to 8%. That was the peak. And it's also worth noting that in 2012 and 13, prices actually went backwards in moving average terms. Of course, there were much more volatile movements. And you can see here that in 2009 and 2010 and 11, prices actually went into negative territory, down to minus 5% in 2009 and minus 5% in 2011, and there was another negative move in June 2019, so last year. And I should actually add that this information is before COVID, because it's taken from the ABS data, and the ABS index is actually quite late relative to current movements. So don't be misled by the uptick at the end there. So that's the true story about Brisbane quarterly percentage property growth. Now, I can also just show you what's happened with regard to the other markets. So this is Sydney over the same period of time based on the index. This is Melbourne, again, based on the ABS index. So you can see that Sydney's grown a little more, actually has dropped back and has not recovered. And Melbourne is close to its peak, but of course that was before the COVID hit. It's now dropping. And this is Brisbane. So you can see there that relative to those other centres, the growth levels in Brisbane are much, much lower relative to Sydney and Melbourne. That's Adelaide, which is tracking very close to where Brisbane was, a little bit more upward movement, but now slowing. This is Perth, and you can see there that Perth has been sliding since 2012, 2013. And in fact, if you look in some postcodes, it's even longer than that. This is Hobart. So Hobart's had a good run up till this time, seeing that changing now. And the thing about Hobart, of course, is it's a very small market. Quite a few property investors were piling in, and that's pricing out house price purchasers who are living locally. This is Darwin, which has dropped even more than Perth. Darwin is a horrible story with regard to property price movements. Darwin is now sitting at an index level which was last seen in 2007, 2008. In other words, no growth at all from that period. And this is Canberra. Canberra is doing a little better than Brisbane. And I heard somebody spruiking today saying we needed to build another 100,000 properties in Canberra due to high demand. Not sure. There's lots of spare property in Canberra at the moment, but we'll see about that. And here is the average, which shows that if you average it all out and weight it accordingly, then prices have moved up. And of course, recently they've moved up because there was a bit of recovery in Sydney and Melbourne, but of course that's now all reversed. And the point I want to make is if you bought in the year 2000, sure, you are up a bit, but the chances are, if you actually were in Darwin or Perth, you wouldn't be up much at all. And if you bought in later, and the average holding time for property is still about 7 years, so if you bought 7 years ago, actually in a number of locations, you make nothing at all. And the other point to make, of course, is that inflation has been running at, 3%, 2%? Now it's, of course, a little lower. And that means that in real terms, today's values would be quite a lot lower than the index data. Now, what I want to do is to look at the individual postcodes. Remember that Windsor, which is 4030 up in Brisbane, was cited as the postcode with the highest return from the year 2000. And Windsor, of course, is quite close in to the centre of Brisbane, as this map shows. But if we look at Windsor, this is actually the data for both houses and units from 2011 up until 2020. And you can see there that in 2011, the average home price was around 600,000, and the average one is now just over 900,000. The average unit was around 375, 380, and look, it's just around 400 now. So hardly any movement. There was some growth in that middle period, but if you bought in 2016 and 17 into the units, you'd make a loss. If you'd bought into a house, yeah, you might have made a bit, but you know, if you bought in 2018, yeah, if you bought in 2017, less so. And in fact, the average growth, so if you take the duration of 2011 to 2020, the average annual growth rate is around 5%, and that's pretty much 10 years. So that tells you that if they were really true about 400%, then the growth between 2011 and 2000 must have been absolutely enormous. Frankly, I'm very sceptical. Now let's look at another example. This is Bulimba, 4171. Not quite so close in to the centre of Brisbane. And it's a rather similar story once again. With house prices, sure, moving up a little bit, unit prices not doing much at all. And you can see there that in 2011, the average home price was just over 800,000. The average unit was around 550,000. Today, units are a little higher, just over the 600,000. And houses have come back, so there's a drop between 2018 and now. And we're sitting at about 1.3 million, which, by the way, I still think is quite expensive for an average house in that location. And in growth terms, 5.3% per annum is what houses have done over that period from 2011 to 2020, whereas units, the average growth is 2.3%. Now, of course, both of those, again, are not inflation adjusted. If you overlay inflation as well, hardly anything at all, really. So again, you'd have to have some massive amounts of growth from 2011 to 2000. And I would make the point that it is almost impossible to get publicly available information back to the year 2000. So it's rather convenient that the source data is masked and unavailable. Now let's look at another one. This is actually Cannon Hill. That's where the lady was saying that Cannon Hill was a great place to live with lots of potential. So let's have a look and see what the price is doing. Well, in the year 2011, you could see that the units were just around 500,000, houses just slightly more. And then units dropped while house prices did indeed grow. Well, they peaked in 2017, actually, at just under 800,000 on average terms. And they're now just over 700,000. Units are lower today in 2020 than they were in 2011. Remember, this isn't inflation adjusted again. This is just direct data. And the average growth over that period for houses is 3.2%. So you might just be making inflation if you're lucky. And in fact, the average fall for units is down 1.3%. And again, I have to say, well, how do you get from 2011 to 2000 with, well, you know, 350% growth cumulative? I find it hard to see how that can possibly be right. And I'll just show you one more. This is actually at Inala, at 4077. Now, Inala is further out, as this map shows. And as a result, there are no units to report. House prices started in 2011 at just under 300,000. Went up to a peak in 2017 of just over 360,000. And has been dropping ever since to below 350,000 now. And the growth rate for houses was 1.9%. And so there's very little evidence there to support the claim that from 2000 to 2020 there was a 400% rise in median prices in the location. And again, no way of validating the information either. So I just want to make the point, therefore, that if you are to take seriously those very short TV segments, you need to do your own due diligence, because they are really not telling you the full story at very least. And in fact, there's hardly any way to validate whether they're telling you the truth at all. The fact of the matter is that all of the postcodes that I've looked at, the top 20 that they said had risen over 400%, I can find no evidence to support it. Now, there might be a few outliers, of course, but I think you have to be really sceptical. Now, I just want to discuss the credit aggregate data came out at the end of the month. So let's now look at the monthly data firstly. This is the aggregates from the RBA, and it shows that owner-occupied lending grew 0.3%. Investor housing was flat, so overall housing grew 0.2%. Business was down 0.8%. Personal credit was down 0.6% over the month. Not much there to suggest anything other than a slowing market. If you look at the annualized data, then again, we see some quite interesting trends with owner-occupied lending up 5.4% over the year, business credit up 4.8%, overall housing, though, only 3.1%, so it continues to slide, And that's because investor housing dropped again 0.7% over the last 12 months and personal credit's down 10.5%. So even business credit is slowing, as you can see, relative to previously it was above 6 or 7%. And there's very little evidence here to show any significant momentum. What actually happened in June, I think, was a little bit of momentum created by the fact that the lockdown was eased. Of course, the lockdown is now getting much tighter again. Now, if we look then at the aggregate annualized for total credit, it's at 2.9%, which is pretty low. It was a little bit lower back in October, December 2019, lifted a little, but now is sliding down again. And of course, it will continue to slide, I think. But look at this. Broad money is hugely up at 10.2%. And that reflects all of the government stimulus, the job seeker, the job keeper, all of the superannuation withdrawals and everything else. So there's a lot of money sloshing around the system. And some of that, I guess, will get spent by individual households. Some of it will be saved. But there's something weird when, in fact, broad money goes in one direction and the inflation rate, as we reported recently, goes in the other direction. The economy is not firing at all well. And now let me just go over to the APRA series. So, of course, just worth reminding you that APRA gives you information for the ADIs for the banks. And this is, again, looking at the stock of loans. It doesn't tell you anything about the non-banks. And there are some quite interesting trends here in this series too. So we'll start with the aggregate credit, which actually grew a little for owner-occupiers. And the investment sector grew, well, hardly at all, actually. And in fact, the total of investment loans dropped again to just over 36%. So what's happening at the moment is that growth is predominantly being driven from the owner-occupied sector of the market. And in fact, there was a little bit of a spike in June as we came out of lockdown briefly. Now, if we then look at the ADI changes per month, you can see there that owner-occupied loans actually rose by 0.57% over the month, which was, you know, a little bit up from previously. Although, if you look at the longer-term trends, it's still not massively strong. The investment lending was up in positive territory at 0.19%, so there's been a little bit of an uptick in property investors. Well, there was up until the recent lockdowns. We're seeing that now go away again. Total credit for lending for houses, therefore, was 0.43% higher. So very small, just a little bit up. And what's interesting about that is it shows that there was a little bit of a change of attitude back in June when the lockdown came off, but I suspect that's now gone away again. Now, the other thing to look at is the selected portfolio movements between May and June. And you can see there that Westpac actually grew both its owner-occupied, the blue, and investor, the orange bands, as did ANZ. They were the two largest. CBA did as well. National Australia Bank dropped their investor portfolios again. Macquarie grew both. Bendigo and Adelaide Bank grew both. Bank of China grew both. ING grew owner-occupied, but not investor. And Citigroup, Suncorp, and Members Equity Bank, as well as a few other organisations, all dropped their total balances. So essentially, you could say that the major banks were actually driving momentum a little bit stronger than previously, which is what we expected because they've been discounting their rates very strongly to try and get market share and to get people to refinance to them. And I would also make the point, of course, that the fact that interest is now not being paid and repayments are not being paid means that for many banks, the balances are automatically rising. So in fact, the fact that people don't have to repay their loans has a positive impact on the size of the portfolios. And by the way, that observation was one that was hardly discussed at all by the analysts when they looked at these numbers. So just to complete this conversation then, I want to make 2 points. The first is that you have to be really, really careful when you see a little bit of a news thread on the TV or on the internet or, you know, in some of the articles published, of course, by the real estate sector or published on behalf of the real estate sector by the mainstream media. Be sceptical because they don't tell you the full story very often. And of course, they want you to buy. As I said in my previous presentation, it's all about trying to get people to buy back into the market despite the fact the market's falling. And the second point is the credit data shows that we are in a very slow growth environment. And I want to remind you again that all of my analysis shows me that the rate of change of credit growth is the best indicator of future house prices. And from what I'm seeing, this is yet another negative indicator of price falls. We are going to see price falls continuing over the next few months. I have my doubts as to whether we'll see any positive growth, but if you watch my show next Tuesday, you'll be able to see my latest scenarios. So to close, another warning, be cautious, be careful, and don't believe everything you read, particularly when it comes from the mainstream media and when it comes from the real estate sector. They do have axes to grind. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.